Why, good afternoon. The time is 4 p.m. You're tuned to KDNK, and that was Rebirtha we were just listening to. Big shout out to Boston Bruce, always a good time with the theme show. I'm joined here in studio by Gus Richardson with our Youth News Bureau.
Hello there.
Had his first day of school today.
I did. In a while, not ever.
First day since the summer. And you're now a senior at Roaring Fork High
School? Yeah, I'm now a senior.
Cool. So how did it feel to be in the orientation as a senior?
It was weird. Yeah. We got to leave before everybody else. That was cool.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Always fun.
I noticed when I was at Roaring Fork High School how much the class size dwindled from when we were freshmen to when we were seniors. There were like a third of the amount of people.
Definitely.
From over 100 to less than 50. But that's not the topic of today. Today we are here to talk about Ultimate Frisbee, and we have two guests in the studio. The first is Sadie Perkins, who lives in Snowmass Village and has been in the Valley since like 2017, you mentioned?
Yep.
Awesome. Yeah. Cool. And then we also have Sean Gerum.
It's Gerum.
Gerum.
Actually. Yeah.
Sean Gerum. And you've been in the Valley since 2004?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
And you're both members of the Elk Mountain Ultimate League. So why don't we hear from each of you first about how you came to know this Ultimate Frisbee League?
Oh, yeah. Well, my history with Ultimate is introduced by the Elk Mountain Ultimate League.
Okay.
I started playing as this league started up, and yes, all of my experience. Most folks go and play in college and have prior experience, but I was 30 years old when I discovered this sport of sprinting and running and working really hard.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was a part of the group that kind of helped organize the league, took it from more pickup casual play to something a little more organized, and quickly fell in love. And I've been playing ever since.
And did you come from an athletic background? Because it is a lot of sprinting.
It is. And I played some sports in like middle school. I've always done more individual fitness oriented things. And so the team aspect of the play is still a learning curve. Running really hard and working really hard, I'm natural at or can do,
mm-hmm.
but doing that in coordination with seven other people on the field, six other people on the field, is tough. I didn't have any field sport. I didn't play soccer or basketball or lacrosse or any of those games that require you to work all together, and that's part of the challenge and part of the fun too.
Mm-hmm. Sadie, how did you discover this?
So my dad played Ultimate and introduced me to the sport. So I started playing Ultimate the year after I graduated from high school, 2004, and so I started playing in a summer league in Syracuse, driving an hour with my brother's best friend to play summer league in Ithaca, where my brother was playing as well, and then playing Ultimate after work. That was like really like slightly, it's like not like completely unorganized, but like only barely know the rules, with folks just from work. They play, so I was playing 3 days a week when I was introduced to it, and then I played in college. And my first whole year of playing Ultimate, I lucked onto a team that made it to go to nationals at the college level.
Yeah.
So we ended up ranked 9th in the country nationally. I was brand new to the sport, so it wasn't my abilities, but that's where I started. And then I played all through college. I played with many club teams on the East Coast, and then I moved to Colorado. I played with club teams down in Denver and Boulder, and then in 2017 I moved up here, and I wanted to continue to play, so I found Elk Mountain Ultimate, and I play with them every week.
Very cool. Gus, have you ever played Ultimate Frisbee before?
I have not. Can you explain to someone like me, like, the general play form of what Ultimate Frisbee
that's
is?
That's a good point. So one of the most common, you know, responses to, you know, oh, I play Ultimate. There's, oh, I've played that. It's, you know, the one with the dogs. It's like, no. Oh, with the baskets, right? People often confuse it with disc golf.
Okay.
And then there's also, I don't even know what it's called, but where they throw a frisbee off a dock and the dogs go running and jumping.
That sounds
and
fun.
For some reason, they confuse all of those disc sports. Ultimate Frisbee is a field sport akin to soccer or lacrosse. You have end zones like a football field. To score, you catch a thrown frisbee, a thrown disc in the end zone. The advancement of the disc, of the play, is only by throwing the disc. So as soon as you catch the disc, you get yourself to a stop, and then you're throwing it to the next person.
Mm-hmm.
So like with football, there's a kickoff. We call it the pull. And people line up on either end zone line. The pull goes from one side to the other. That disc is caught, and then it's a series of throws and catches to move down the field. So the other team is often trying to prevent you from catching the disc. And a lot of the ways you get open to catch a disc is by sprinting really hard, cutting really hard, cutting out, running out in one direction, stopping hard, running back in the other direction, and sometimes doing that again just to fake out the person covering you.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's so much running and we don't have pads or anything else, integral to the sport is it's a non-contact sport.
Mm-hmm.
And so everyone's, you know, personal responsibility is to play safe themselves and make sure other people play safe. And the rules are structured around that so that when you are sprinting, when you are trying to catch a disc, you're not sacrificing anybody's well-being in order to make the play. It's better to be safe and move on, or you make a call and things can sort out so that the priority stays on being safe.
And once you catch the frisbee, so you freeze and you only have 10 seconds, right, before
Correct.
You have to throw it?
Yeah. So you catch a frisbee, and if you're in the middle of a sprint, you can take, you know, steps to slow down.
Okay.
But then you stop, and then somebody runs up on you, like the person covering you starts counting. The stall count is what that's called, and you've got 10 seconds to throw the disc.
And I thought it was really interesting. The article pointed out how it's self-reffing is a big part of the culture. So
Correct.
Everybody takes that personal ownership of being a good sport and not trying to cheat and holding each other accountable. And that's part of the fun too, right?
Yes. Yeah. That's an important part of the culture of Ultimate Frisbee, which is a part that's like, if you talk to people who are into the Ultimate community, spirit of the game is super important to them. And part of that is being like the integrity of holding up the rules and like not taking advantage of the fact that it's self-refed to your own advantage.
Right. Yeah. The term I've heard for like basketball is, oh, you play to the whistle, meaning you do everything you can until a ref calls you with a whistle, you know, so you try to get away with, you try to push rules, you try to bend rules.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least that's my understanding.
That could be a big part of soccer too.
Yeah. And soccer as well. It's like, oh, whatever you can get away with, but just don't get caught kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimate has its roots in the counterculture of the 60s. And I think, the way the sport was set up was a pushback to, those ideas of, playing to the whistle, and instead it put the responsibility onto the players to play fair and stick with the spirit of the game. This is like capital S, capital G, written into the rule book about the conduct of play.
Mm-hmm.
And that's that you're not going to purposely take advantage of any of the rules or try to bend them. You're going to put all of your effort into not just keeping everyone safe, but sticking within the rules and doing your best to keep the play fair.
Yeah. I was just a couple of months ago in Aurora playing Nationals, but for people older than 30. and in the middle of the game, we have like people, we have captains of the team that are responsible for spirit. So they're checking in with each other during the game and making sure that everyone is like following the rules up to each other's standards, and like nobody's like, if something got, a disagreement got out of hand, we can like talk to our spirit captains and they'll help us resolve our issues. So it's like all about communication, and like at the highest levels, they're still doing that and talking to each other.
Yeah. And instead of like a ref blows the whistle and says, oh, it was this violation or that violation, the players are responsible for the calls. And so a player will make a foul call or a strip call or a pick call, and it initiates a conversation. The player who they're calling the foul on can accept or contest that foul. If they say, oh, no, that wasn't a foul, they can contest it and say, no, I don't think that was a foul. But before that official decision between the two, you know, parties, the two players on the field, they have a chat. Hey, man, I think you really bumped into me there and it slowed me down. I tripped up. You know, I know you didn't, you know, maybe they didn't mean it. Maybe, you know, it's not a call is not an accusation of, oh, you're being a jerk. It's more of, this happened. Mm-hmm. It wasn't fair. And then you follow the set rules to resolve the conflict. Mm-hmm. And then if they can't come to agreement, there's a structure in the rules to just sort that out. Okay, you fouled, you contested, and there's that third option. The foul, and you accept the foul, and okay, there's that, the resolution is there, like written. You just, this is what you do. Okay, the disc gets thrown back. Oftentimes, if you can't figure things out, it's, you know, we've always called it the ultimate do-over. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, okay, we've did this thing and it didn't turn out the way it could have. There maybe was something unfair where you couldn't figure out a clear answer. So it just goes back and we just start over from, you know, 3 minutes ago, and play continues on. Mm-hmm.
For listeners just tuning in, this is Everything Under the Sun. Our guests today are Sadie Perkins and Sean Garam. And they're telling us all about Ultimate Frisbee, representing the Elk Mountain Ultimate League, which meets in Crown Mountain Park, we should mention, on Mondays, right?
Right. Mondays, 6 o'clock, we start warming up and throwing Frisbees around. We've been there for almost 16, 17 years now. Yep.
And everyone is welcome.
Yeah.
Yeah, so nobody, like, there's not a fee you have to pay, or you don't need to sign a waiver or anything.
We do collect some fees just to cover. We have field lines that aren't painted on the grass. We roll them out every night, just so that we have sidelines. We have discs. We provide jerseys. One of the things that we require on our emails to show up is a white and a dark, so that you can differentiate teams. Mm-hmm. Your cleats really help, and then a positive attitude. So you don't need much, but yeah, we do collect a little bit of money just to keep equipment and people supplied. But otherwise, we are self-described as a learning league. Mm-hmm. So we try to take people who've never ever played and make space for them, teach them how to play, teach them how to throw, teach them the strategies of the game.
So does this garner like pretty big crowds when you're doing it?
I mean, define big crowds. We get
you
happy.
Can define big crowds.
So
go
each
ahead.
The ultimate teams on the field are 7 players versus 7 players. Mm-hmm. We feel happy when we end up with 12 people on a team, which means, you know, there's five subs, and you know, you can, you know, sprint to your heart's content and then take a point off and somebody can sub in for you. Mm-hmm. We don't always get that many folks. I'd say between 17 and 20 folks is probably our average over the season, but it fits in spurts. Sometimes we have a bunch more, sometimes we have a bunch less. Usually we only have just one game going each Monday, and and that is has been enough for us for quite a while. We tried to play multiple games, but we ended up with smaller teams. So instead of playing a full like 7-on-7, we play 4-on-4, and it just wasn't the same game. And so, there were 20-ish people or so, 20, 25 people a night is a good night for us.
Sure.
Cool. Yeah. And so I kind of want to bring it back to you, Sadie. You mentioned that you were introduced by your brother after high school. Mm-hmm. And then you went to great lengths, distances, literally, to play this game. And so I just wonder, like, what captivated you then and what keeps you so engaged with Ultimate Frisbee?
Yeah. In high school I played soccer and I ran track and was pretty mediocre at both. And Ultimate Frisbee, I felt really drawn to chasing down a Frisbee. They just float for ages, and, it creates a situation where you get so many more like diving plays than other sports, which is really fun. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember in college, like, we'd be excited on rain days because we'd practice diving to catch the disc.
Yeah.
It's always been, like, that part of the sport and then the community around it. I just have met, like, the best people playing Ultimate Frisbee. They're, like, so many good friends from college, like, that I'm, like, still in touch with. And yeah. So, and then like the tournament I was playing in Aurora earlier this year, it was organized by a woman who was a freshman when I was a senior in college, and she thought of me and invited me to join the team. Like, it's just like built like lifelong friendships as well.
Beautiful. Yeah. I wonder how the rules and just the culture the game creates. Can you speak to how those things translate outside of the game as well? Are there skills that you develop playing that also help you be a better person in the world?
Yeah. I feel like that's a thinker. But like, for sure, like the self officiating aspect of it, like, I feel like that's just like a great lesson for life is like, you should do the right thing. Like, there's like that accountability to do the right thing by, like, even though you could cut corners to get ahead, it's kind of like you didn't win on your own, so maybe just play by the rules and do the right thing.
Yeah, I think the aspect of that conflict resolution, you know, how it can be if you talk calmly. When you are sprinting and your heart rate is through the roof and you're really competing, you're giving it your all to make the point or catch the disc or do whatever. When something arises where you have to then switch off that, you know, lizard brain that's just all about movement and running and convert into civil discussion. That takes practice. That takes a lot of effort. It's not something that everyone just has naturally. I don't think. I think that your emotions are tied with your physical state.
Absolutely.
And I think having that practice of being in an elevated physical state, but then, you know, having reminders, having civil conversations, working to put the emotions aside and talk about what's fair and what's right and what actually did happen. You know, that comes up in every game. You know, maybe not for every single player, but like it comes up enough that that kind of practice definitely translate into the real world. If you get cut off on the highway, or if somebody's, you know, being a real jerk and you're really mad at them, you know, you can lean on that practice of putting emotions aside and just talking about, well, what are the facts, what needs to be said, what's the most effective way to communicate what happened. That's a big takeaway for me.
And would you say that every player that you interact with is good at that, or is it definitely
No. Definitely aspirational.
Yeah, I've been on teams where like certain people were like well known for not having that ability, and like the whole team gets brought into like people, that perception of people, unfortunately. Right. But
right. Yeah. So, I've been on teams with folks who they're making calls, they're doing things, and you're like, I wish they wouldn't do that, you know. Yeah. And sometimes when it's, you know, in the right environment, you have a spirit captain, or you have somebody speak with them and say, hey, listen, you're kind of out of line, the spirit of the game is kind of being sacrificed here, you know. Mm-hmm. But I think the trick, we get a lot of athletes from soccer, from basketball, from field hockey coming in and playing, and they take a lot of their habits with them. And it takes some time for people to unlearn that idea of playing to the whistle. But the ones that stick with it, I think do okay.
Do you ever reach a point where you have to ask somebody to not return? Has it ever gotten to that extreme where a person's just not bringing that spirit that you need to see?
We've not in our league. There have been some conflicts that I think somebody will just choose not to come back or not come back for a while. Mm-hmm. In tournaments, you know, I've seen like spirit fouls is what that's called, and I've seen some folks like asked to stop playing or leave the tournament, but it's quite rare, and mm-hmm. Usually there's other factors involved.
Yeah, I actually can't think of any time that any player's been asked to like step out for a game even, but like. Yeah, I can't think of any.
I think a lot of times it's self-correcting by the team themselves.
Could you talk about this system that you've created, not only to track win-loss records, but also give people points for bringing their spirit?
So, yeah, Gus, you were asking about numbers. Mm-hmm. And when the league was started, we had set teams. We said, okay, you're on Team A, you're on Team B, you're on Team C. We had folks with all different colored jerseys, and there'd be like 10 folks on the roster on each set team for the whole summer. This is a beautiful place to live, and people scatter and are climbers and rafters, and they work service jobs that come up with shifts at night and stuff. And so all 10 folks on each team wouldn't always show up. To address that, we restructured where every night, whoever shows up gets mixed up on a different team. And we keep track of which team won and assign a win point to each player on the winning team.
Okay.
To encourage new players and involvement in the league and organizing and just general overall spirit, we also give equal points to folks who help set up the field, who clean up, who bring refreshments or snacks to the sidelines. If anybody's recruiting a player, they get a plus one point. For a while, we had players who are driving over every week from Paonia. And so we basically structured a plus 60 point. If you drove more than 60 miles to get to our games, they got a point for that. And so it's a way that, at the end of the league, we take the highest point winners and assemble a little team, and they get a little prize, a little trophy, you know, just accolades. But it's a way for somebody who may not ever be on a winning team, you know, mm-hmm. by happenstance, by, you know, maybe skill, but often it's just happenstance, to still be involved and have a chance at being a winner.
Mm. So when is the season's finale?
We are playing through the 18th of September.
Okay.
Our league usually runs June through mid-September. We kind of like scale back a little bit and play until the daylight savings time change. But the official, you know, keeping track of points and rolling out the fields and everything goes from June to mid to late September.
Okay. So people only have a few more weeks to catch before the end of the season.
There's a lot of ways to get points, so you still could win.
That's right. One player from who was around last year, who was living here last year, but was from South Africa and left after the end of the season. He came back for 1 week this year. He was just visiting, but he was playing with his South African Nationals team. And he bought six members of the team along with him.
Oh, nice.
And so he also won the game, or you know, was on the winning team. And so just in a single night, he had like 7 or 8 points because he had, you know, drinks on the sideline and was came from a long distance. And so, yeah, he racked up a bunch of points in just one night.
Cool. Well, we're almost out of time. So just give you each a minute to express any final thoughts.
Well, I just want to thank everyone who is still in this valley, who helped get Elk Mountain Ultimate started, who's maintained the attendance and the play and the great spirit and the positivity that we've had. There's so many folks who, like, over the years have been involved. I want to just invite anyone who knows how to play, doesn't know how to play, and has any interest to come see us on Monday and throw a disc with us. You'll enjoy it.
Crown Mountain Park, every Monday until mid-September, and it's 6 o'clock it starts?
6 o'clock, yep.
Okay.
Yep, and until daylight savings after that is unofficial, but you still go.
Yeah.
Oh, fun. We'll be playing there through October.
Okay, so cool.
Come by if you'll see the discs in the air, we'll throw it to you.
Yes, absolutely.
And do you have any final closing thoughts, Angie?
Just come out if you're interested. Like, you've never played before, never did a sport, just come out. We'd love to have you.
Awesome. Thank you both so much for joining us on Everything Under the Sun.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Gus.
Thank you, Raleigh.